This is Pharma Forum web editor Nicole Raleigh, and in this podcast for QDOS MS 2023, I have with me Sarah Roderick and Ellie Garlick, winners of the Judges Special QDOS Recognition Award for their work as Queen's Nurses and MS Specialist Nurses in the Huntingtonshire Community Multiple Sclerosis Specialist Nursing Team at the Cambridgeshire and Peterborough NHS Foundation Trust. So, Sarah, Ellie, how does it feel to get recognised for your work by the QDOS MS programme?
I think we were both very surprised when we got the award. We weren't expecting it at all. We actually thought the presentation had finished, and then they announced our award. So we were very shocked and surprised, but very, very proud and very happy to receive it.
Absolutely. It was such a surprise, and it felt fantastic to know that what we're doing has been recognised like that, and that clearly, hopefully, that means we're doing something right.
Mm. Absolutely. So before we discuss what you've done, can you describe the unmet need that led to this nomination and essentially this win?
So I guess I've been, I joined the team about 10 years ago, just under 10 years ago, and Ellie about 8 years, is that right, Ellie?
Yeah.
Yes. And when I started my role, it just felt that there were lots of people living with MS in our area that weren't managing, that were struggling a lot mm-hmm. with their condition. And we were almost just putting out fires here, there and everywhere, lots of crises, lots of people and families in crisis. And it was just trying to work out how do we best support them. A role where we see our patients from diagnosis of their MS, and we tend to keep them on our caseload for the whole time. We never discharge them. And so, you know, it's just getting to know those patients and finding out what their needs were. That was the big struggle that we had, really. Lots of patients who were in crisis, as I say, and struggling.
Absolutely. I think what we found was we've had referrals from GPs in our area for people with MS who've had MS for many, many years, mm-hmm. but weren't known to any MS specialist services. They'd just been sort of managing alone. So being that point of contact for them, and, you know, knowing that they've got somebody on their team, I think, you know, we found that that's something that people really value.
Yes, definitely. So talk me through now how you have addressed this in your work, both of you. What exactly is it that you've done that has addressed these fires, these crises?
Mm-hmm. So I guess we just had to get to know people and get our name out, work out almost firstly, we had to prioritise who needed our help and support to start with, and then who were managing. Those people who'd had MS and were managing, we also needed to reach out to them. So we split our caseload up into different categories almost, so that we could then work out when we needed to see people and how often, depending on how their need was. So for patients who are newly diagnosed, we felt that those people needed more support than somebody who hopefully had been living with MS for a while and was maintaining their condition, or they're having a good quality of life and managing their symptoms. So we split our caseload up into different categories, and that then gave us almost a basis of how to support our patients. Those with newly diagnosis we see more often, people who have complex needs or whose condition might be progressing and then they're in a difficult phase of their condition, we see more often. And those patients who might be coming more to the end of their life or in the palliative phase, we see them more often. And our main goal really is to help people to live as well as they can with their MS and to manage their symptoms, but to also to be as independent as they can, so that their MS, they can manage their MS independently and live as well as they can.
And I think as part of that, we've worked really hard to develop really strong links with the MDT, yeah. So other local services. So we work where our team is part of the neuro rehab team, the community neuro rehab team locally. So we have, you know, really, really good relationships with our neuro OTs and neuro physios and speech and language therapists and the bladder and bowel service locally, so that we have that local knowledge to refer and signpost people onto other services as they need, and to get them that feedback back from those teams as well, so that we can oversee and coordinate things for the care of people with MS in our area. But yeah, like Sarah said, we do a lot of education of our patients so that we're hopefully helping them develop the skills to self-manage their MS and then hopefully not need us quite so much or quite so frequently, but always being there as their support in the background to call on when they need to.
Yes, and it's crucial support. And as you say, you're doing it the whole circle of everything they need. So in doing this, what challenges, and I'm sure there have been, what challenges have you encountered in doing that? How did you respond to those challenges? Can you tell me more about that?
I guess the challenges were initially because we were both new to that whole area. We had to find, you know, all the other members of the multidisciplinary team, build up relationships with them, find out how we could work together. Also finding, you know, linking with the GP surgeries and working out how they work. I think through COVID that has almost helped with communication for us and our patients and the other professionals. So we work in quite a rural area, you know, it covers a large geographical area. So having you know, the ability to perhaps do a joint visit with a speech and language therapist and a dietitian, for example, but online with the patient and the family member who might be in a different area as well. All of those sort of things has helped us. Those challenges of travel and trying to get everybody to one place at one time, that's helped.
I think one of the main challenges, certainly at first, is identifying those people that I mentioned before who've been living with MS for many years and aren't known to MS services. And we still occasionally get someone popping up that we think, how did we not know you already? You know, there'll be sort of a new referral that will come in, someone living in our area that we think we should have known you. And recently we've been doing some mapping work, and Sarah, you've looked at the numbers of people living with MS in our area, and clearly there are still people we haven't reached because our caseload does not add up with those numbers. So there's still more work to be done.
So I think it's becoming quite clear the impact, the tangible impact that you're making for those who live with MS. But from your own perspective, what has been the result of your work for MS patients, not only the patients, but for their families as well?
Hopefully, I think we, large part of our patients, you know, they see us as collaborators. So we're there alongside them and their families, and that might be their parents, but it might also be their children. So it's that we sort of try to work with the whole family, and we're their first point of contact. So they tend to know, we try to, through education, we try to teach them when they need to contact us and when they don't need to, how they manage their symptoms with it before they need to contact us. So we teach them red flags and things like that, which then helps them to be in control, really. I think we've also empowered our patients. So there's a number of support groups that have set up throughout the region, and so they're able to support each other as well as call on us to support them. So that's been another positive aspect of the work we've done.
And I think it's been very satisfying for us, you know, when we meet someone and they're in crisis and we can do some really sort of intensive work with them, and we can see them very frequently and very regularly and really be led by their needs. Mm-hmm. And then we'll get to a point where we think, oh, we haven't heard from so-and-so for a while. And we check in with them and realise, well, that's because actually they're doing fine right now. They're managing really well. They're on top of things. And seeing that sort of change and progress that, you know, they've had that period of really needing that intense support, and it's been able to get to the point where actually now they are self-managing, they're on top of things, and life is going pretty well for them right now. You know, that's an incredibly satisfying thing to see.
It must be, yes, definitely.
But by the education that we've done with them, we then know, and we're reassured that they will come back to us if they are starting to struggle again. Mm-hmm. You know, they know when to contact us and when not to contact us. We also run clinics locally within all of the different areas. Which means that people don't have to travel too far to see us. But we also offer home visits as well, which obviously suits some people. And since COVID, we do a lot of video calls and phone calls and by email as well. So we try to see people and make contact with people to how it suits them, really.
So we always say we're very patient led. You know, hopefully we try and meet people's needs by their needs rather than by sort of strict protocols. You know, yes, we've got guidelines and we've got sort of things that we try and, you know, we do have some structure to how we do things, but we try and be led by the patient's needs.
And I'm assuming the answer is yes. Have you received feedback from patients and their families? And if so, what's that feedback been like? Is there any you'd care to share?
Yes, we do. We do have feedback. There's certainly moments where patients have emailed us and said thank you and so on. I think particularly for me, you mentioned when you introduced us that we're both Queen's nurses. Mm-hmm. So I became a Queen's nurse while in this post. And part of the process for applying for the Queen's nurse title is formally asking for feedback from two of your patients. So knowing that, you know, I approached two of my patients and asked if they'd be willing to do that for me. And, you know, the fact that they were willing, and, you know, not just willing, they were very happy and enthusiastic and said, yes, absolutely. You know, you've made such a difference. And they were really sort of pleased to be asked and to be able to give that feedback. And then when I was awarded the title and I was able to go back to them and say, you know, thank you for doing that, they gave me the title, seeing how happy they were on my behalf. I think, you know, we always talk about how a lot of our care is based around the therapeutic relationship with our patients and us knowing them over that long period of time. And that made it really sort of clear how important that relationship is to them, to me. And that was really special.
The other part of the feedback that we have had is the work with the MDT, so the multidisciplinary team, and how, you know, if our patient needs an intervention from therapists, for example, or from speech and language, we often do joint visits with them, which means then that, you know, they'll do their piece of therapy and then we join them when they're almost at the end of that, so they can hand back over to us and we and the patient and the family know, you know, what the plan is going forward. And then in the future, if the patient needs further intervention, then they're part of that conversation. And so that we get good feedback, I think, from the rest of the team. Mm-hmm. And I think it fits with the way they work with their patients, as well as how, you know, we sort of complement each other, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's a very good word, this complementary. It's all fitting, all the pieces mm-hmm. of the jigsaw coming together.
Yes, that's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how do you see your work in this area developing in the future? Are there any sort of signs as to where it might, I want to say grow rather than progress, because it is so all-encompassing at the moment?
So over the last year, we've built up a better communication relationship with other teams that work very closely to us. So that in the acute, in the hospitals, perhaps we've built up the relationship with them. Our trust, we work for a community trust that covers the whole of Peterborough and Cambridgeshire, but we just cover a very small area, which is Huntingdonshire. So that's a region within a larger county. And I think we want to see if we can replicate our work further across the county and work with the teams that already cover Cambridge and Peterborough and perhaps expand and collaborate more. We're a very small team. So Ellie and I are only just one whole-time equivalent, just over one whole-time equivalent as a team. Okay. And that can be problematic if Ellie's on holiday, for example, and I'm off sick, then there's no MS specialist nurse in the area. So by perhaps trying to expand our team a little bit and cover a larger area, we can support each other, be a larger team to support each other. So I guess that's one of the big, that's a huge piece of work, but that's one of the things that we're wanting to do.
I think we've got big ambitions.
Yes.
Having seen the difference we've made to the people we've had contact with. And like I said, we've recently discovered that the number of people living with MS in the area that we do cover doesn't match up with our caseload. So we need to try and go and be more proactive identifying people who should have access to us that don't at the moment.
So what advice would you give someone else looking to replicate the work you've done and the work you do and the work you're looking to do?
The way we started initially was just putting things down on paper. When you move into an area and there's an unmet need for people living with MS, it can be quite overwhelming because there are just people coming from all angles asking for help and support. But by putting it down on paper and almost writing a plan of and prioritising what needed to be done first, and then how we could, over time, address the different issues, that's what we did. I think it was just breaking things out into sections rather than looking at the whole picture. It was almost too overwhelming initially to do that. And getting to know the other members of the team is really important. That's the biggest thing, is building up relationships with other members of the team, and also with other members of the family. You know, we collaborate with professionals, but also family members and our patients, and seeing ourselves as a team, as a whole, as opposed to patients and professionals, we see ourselves as working together.
Yeah, I think Sarah's pretty much said it all there from the experience. And I came in a couple of years after Sarah, so she'd already done a lot of the groundwork by the time I arrived. But yes, I think anyone trying to set up a service like this will need to look after themselves, because it is quite overwhelming when you get everybody coming out of the woodwork and you think, oh, all these people have huge unmet needs. Who do I go to first? Getting support for yourself as a professional, you know, having clinical supervision systems and things like that. I think that's so important.
Support for all.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely.
Is there anything else either of you would like to add in relation to this Kudos Award and the recognition of the work you do?
I think possibly the only thing we haven't said is thank you.
Yes.
It was very so, yeah, it was lovely. It was really, it feels really good to be recognised. I know we did touch on it at the beginning, but it means a lot. Thank you.
It's been a boost to the whole team, not just for Ellie and myself, but, you know, all the whole team, just to know that we all manage to support, we all support our patients with MS to our best ability. Yeah, it's been a real honour. Thank you.
Thank you for your time today, and thank you also for the work that you do. It's been a pleasure.